and said,
"Whatever I decide, you must hurry. With or without my help, this tunnel will be discovered soon. If I come with the group who discovers you, I will shoot just as quickly as the others. So do not look to me for sympathy in that moment. All I can do is warn you now. Your biggest enemy is time."
I wasn't sure about that. Right now, Mueller seemed like a pretty big enemy to me. Fritz only nodded and said,
"We're going to escape, and your family is welcome when we do. Watch for the shovel outside. We'll cross that same night."
Chapter 31. An appeal to fear never finds an echo in German hearts. Otto von Bismarck, creator of the German Empire. Fritz and I went straight home afterward. Mueller's visit had left both of us with legs of jelly, and nothing he had promised was very comforting. As far as I was concerned, wherever we went now, his gun was still pointed our way. Another dreaded reality to add to my growing list of worries. As we walked home, Fritz pointed out the good news that Mueller would probably come with us for the escape. Otherwise, he could have just shot us there and earned himself a fine promotion for discovering that tunnel. I suppose that was how Fritz's and my thinking had evolved. The fact that we hadn't been shot and left to die was the morbid way in which we cheered ourselves up. We passed by a bakery offering old bread for a single Ostmark. Fritz said we could spare that much and bought some for each of us, which we munched on as we walked. It was dry and wouldn't go very far in helping our hunger, but it was better than nothing. Frau Eberhardt was in front of our apartments as we approached, so Fritz and I crossed the street and pretended to look in the storefronts there until she went inside. We'd go to any extreme to avoid her in the future. It was a long night afterward for me. As tired as I felt, too much had happened that day. With Anna and what was surely the final cut in our friendship, the broken shovel, and then Officer Mueller, if we had been found by anyone else, Fritz and I might be dead right now. Maybe that was still our fate. If Mueller could figure out what we were doing, others could too. It was only a matter of time. By morning, though, I felt a little better. We shared the last of what little food was in the apartment and then reminded each other that a new shovel was more important than a full belly. After buying the shovel, we made our way to the welcome building. It looked just as it had the night before, but different to me somehow. Because now our secret wasn't ours alone, and any safety I had felt in working on this quiet, unused road was gone. Fritz rubbed my head.
"Today will be better, Goethe. I'm sure of it."
I frowned back at him. There's a pit in my stomach.
"Well, there's nothing in mine, so consider yourself lucky."
I didn't like his joke, not at all. "I'm serious, Fritz. Something bad is going to happen."
"It's only leftover worries from yesterday."
Fritz stared at me a moment too long, as if trying to convince himself of his own words.
"Now let's get to work."
Things went fine for a few hours. I was in the garden clearing more weeds and had already emptied out a lot of the dirt from the basement. But then I saw Fritz at the basement window, hissing at me to come inside and to hurry. His eyes were so wide I could see the whites from here. The reason for the pit in my gut. I dropped the spade and hurried for the building, careful not to make it look like anything was unusual if anyone was watching. But when I ducked inside, Fritz had already returned to the shelter, and I breathlessly raced to follow. "What's the matter?" I called while descending the ladder. My answer came as soon as I entered the tunnel. Water trickled beneath my feet and sank into the soil, creating a dense mud. The farther I walked, the more water there was. At the back of the tunnel, Fritz had exposed a pipe that was now spurting out pressurized water like a fireman's hose. The hole in it wasn't large, but it was enough to cause significant damage and was getting worse. The streams of water tore dirt from the walls and sent it in chunks to the ground. Our tunnel was flooding, and if we didn't find a way to stop the water, it would collapse entirely. "How did this happen?" I cried.
"I nicked it with the shovel. Didn't even know it was there until water shot out at me."
"What do we do?" Fritz wrapped his hands around the pipe, which helped. But water leaked down his arms,
and we knew it would burst again as soon as he'd let go. Maybe even break open and flood the entire tunnel before we could escape.
"I have an idea," he said. "But it'll take some time to get what we need. You have to stay here and hold this pipe."
"How long? I can't..."
"However long it takes. Come on, Goethe, you can do this."
So I stood on tiptoes, then reached up and replaced my hands with his. The water pushed at me with a force I didn't expect, and it took effort to keep my grip on the pipe.
"Hurry," I told him. "Just hurry."
He ran from the tunnel and left me in absolute darkness. The flashlight was somewhere at my feet but already buried in mud, and I couldn't let go to search for it. The water dripping down my hands was cold, and the wetter I became, the more I shivered. Fritz said it would take him some time. How long did that mean? An hour? 2 hours? Until evening? I couldn't hold on until evening. With water still dripping from the pipe, I wasn't even sure the tunnel would be here that long. If it collapsed, it'd take me with it. In the darkness, a chunk of dirt or maybe rock fell somewhere behind me. I instinctively ducked, protecting myself from whatever might fall next. It terrified me to wonder how much had just fallen, and if more was about to come down. The only thing I knew for sure was that the mud at my feet was getting deeper. Occasionally, when my hold slipped, water would spurt at harsh angles, inevitably bringing down more chunks of dirt. At one point, it loosened a rock overhead. I heard something start to fall and backed away from the sound, but when it came down, it grazed my arm. From the sting, I was sure it gave me a deep cut, though I couldn't remove my hands from the pipe to check it. It wasn't much longer before I was entirely soaked through. My wet clothes clung to my body, my feet were sinking in mud, and my hair was in my face and over my eyes. But I supposed it didn't matter because there was nothing I could see in here anyway. I was shivering, and my fingers and toes were already numb. But I knew if I let go of the pipe, everything we had worked so hard for was finished. So I held on, doing whatever I could to distract myself. I solved long division problems, recited poems, and prayed for a stronger willpower, though it'd be the last trait my mother would want me to strengthen. When those didn't work, I sang songs in my head. Ironically, the only ones I could think of were the patriotic songs of the pioneers. But their rousing tunes didn't help for long. Time was crawling by, and I'd lost any sense of how long Fritz had been gone. Was it an hour? Was it more? He would come back, I was sure of that. Unless he had been arrested for some reason. Maybe Frau Eberhardt had caused us trouble again. She was obviously capable of it. Or what if the tunnel was already collapsing from the outside? Maybe that's why it was so dark in here, and why he hadn't come back. Maybe he couldn't. That terrified me, and I tried to shake the worst thoughts from my mind. All I knew was that Fritz had said to hold on. So I held to the pipe and to my senses and to my courage, bundling them together and knotting them within my heart. I closed my eyes and repeated his last words to me. "Come on, Goethe. You can do this." Fritz did return eventually. I wasn't sure it was him at first, not until I heard his voice calling for me.
"Where's the flashlight?" he asked.
"Somewhere below me, it fell." Fritz dug for that first, and when the light finally returned to the tunnel, I began breathing easier. He was fine, and I would be after a while. But for now, I was exhausted and freezing, and my numb hands ached from the pressure and the cold. I held them up for so long, I doubted any blood was left in them.
"What happened to your arm?" he asked.
With the light on it, I saw the cut was much worse than I had expected. It ran in a long, jagged line that would probably leave a scar, and stung like it had been attacked by wasps, but at least it wasn't bleeding anymore. I shrugged it off and asked, "What do you have for the pipe?"
"Not much, but it'll have to do."
Fritz held up a clamp and an empty bicycle tube.
"Papa once fixed a pipe in our apartment this way. It's not permanent, but it will work for now."
"Where did you get those?"
"The clamp came from Herr Kraus. He had a few people at his place for some sort of meeting, so he told me to go in his back room and take what I needed from his gadget collection. Didn't ask any other questions." The bicycle tube came from Claudia. She has extras in the shop where she works, and I hoped she wouldn't ask questions either.
Claudia? Your girlfriend?
Ex-girlfriend, remember? Now move your hand. It's going to spurt water, but I've got to wrap this tube around the leak.
I obeyed and caught a powerful spray of water to my face before Fritz got the tube over it. But he pulled it tight and then began wrapping it around the pipe. With every layer, the water sealed up tighter.
Hand me the clamp, he said. It's in my back pocket.
I grabbed the clamp, and while he worked to get it pinched around the pipe, I said, What do you mean you hoped Claudia wouldn't ask questions? Did she? He paused for only a moment and then said,
I went into her shop filthy and wet, and you and I are both thinner than we ought to be right now. Yeah, she had questions.
What did you tell her?
Only about the garden. I said I fell into the pond and that we needed the bicycle tube to prop up some plants.
And did she believe you? Fritz finished sealing the clamp and then patted at the pipe. When he was convinced the leak was fixed, he glanced down at me and said,
Probably not, but she used to like me. I hope it'll be okay.
That wasn't good enough, not after all our other close calls. But as things became more dangerous, simply hoping for anything good was probably the best we could do. Chapter 32. A nation that is afraid to let its people judge the truth and falsehood in an open market is a nation that is afraid of its people. John F. Kennedy, U.S. President, 1962. With the mud and standing water, there was nothing more we could do in the tunnel that day. I suggested working on the garden beneath the warming sun, but after we got into the light and each saw how filthy the other was, we abandoned the idea of doing anything useful. We took a quick swim in the pond and let ourselves dry off somewhat before walking home, and we checked for Frau Eberhard around each corner before rounding it. I couldn't even imagine the nosy questions she'd have for us tonight, especially if she noticed the cut on my arm. Despite our appearances, it was an uneventful walk home. The people who did see us were used to us being dirty and understood we were working in a garden, so they barely seemed to notice we were dirtier than usual. But once we got inside our apartment, something was different.
Fritz and Goethe Lowe, I want explanations!
Mama had come home. My first thought was for the hidden microphones. Mama had been gone for a few weeks to a place where she didn't have to think about them. Hopefully, she remembered that was always a concern here. Every word we said mattered, and the way we said it mattered just as much. My second thought was for what Mama must be thinking as she stared at Fritz and me. Nothing about us looked good. Beneath the layers of dirt, we were too thin, and our clothes were soiled and ragged. I had become deeply tanned, and my hands and knees were calloused. In only 3 weeks, we had gone from being respectable young people to looking more like workhouse orphans. Fritz smiled warmly, walked forward, and gave Mama a kiss on the cheek. I thought I saw him whisper into her ear when he did, but it was so quiet I couldn't be sure. I walked forward next and wanted more than anything to hug her, but she was so clean, I only reached up to kiss her too. When I did, she grabbed my arm and saw the long cut from the rock.
What?
She started to ask. It's just a scratch, I told her, for the microphones. From a brambly weed. We've been gardening. It was supposed to be a surprise for you. Mama was surprised, all right. She pursed her lips together and then told us both to get washed up. Fritz allowed me the first bath, and I took my time in it. Better here than anywhere near Mama's temper. When the water got cold enough to force me out, I could have sworn more dirt than water ran down the drain. When I got into the front room, I expected to see Fritz beside a fire, having written out explanations to Mama. Then everything would be better. But it was too warm outside to justify a fire without creating suspicion. Mama clearly knew we were up to something much bigger than gardening, yet we couldn't freely talk about any of it. While Fritz went to bathe, I asked Mama about Oma Gertrude. I figured that was safe enough.
Oma is well enough to get around now, but she'll have a cast for several more weeks. She misses both of you and wondered why you didn't come with me. Where's all our food?
Mama had been poking around in the kitchen. There were some things, a cup of flour and half a bottle of vinegar in the cupboards, some sausage grease in the refrigerator, and something far in the back of the refrigerator that neither Fritz nor I recognized. We haven't had time for the store, I said. Mama opened her mouth, closed it, and then marched over to the table where she began unpacking a bag.
Oma Gertrude insisted on sending me home with food. Some things are easier to buy out in the country, and she wanted me to bring them back to you.
While I'm cooking, go to your room, Goethe, and get it cleaned up.
You could probably garden in there with how dirty it is.
Yes, Mama. Less than an hour later, warm, wonderful smells began coming from the kitchen. Sausage and potatoes and biscuits. Whatever Oma Gertrude had sent back with my mother, I loved them both all the more for it. Fritz and I didn't need to be called for supper. We were both in our places at the table when Mama served it. Food had never before tasted so good. I was sure of that. I ate greedily and remembered my manners only when I caught a glimpse of Mama's disapproving stare.
"The two of you have turned to savages," she muttered. "And someone had better tell me where all the sheets in this home have gone."
Mama didn't sound terribly angry yet, but then she probably hadn't noticed the missing hinges on our coat closet door either. Fritz and I had a lot of explaining to do. We invited her for a walk around the neighborhood that night. We kept ourselves as far as possible from any of the crowds. Then our story started to unfold. We started with the picture of the welcome building Papa had sent to me. Mama said my father knew it well. During the war, it had been a clothing shop where his mother used to work. As I had suspected, he had sometimes hidden in the air raid shelter of that basement when the sirens went off.
"We need to tell you about that shelter," Fritz said.
We started with the easier part first, about the garden on the surface and about the clothesline set up for me to do laundry in the pond.
"You'd wash my sheets in a dirty old pond?"
Mother had always prided herself on her white laundry.
"Goethe, that will ruin them."
"They are ruined now, Mama, all of them." I took a deep breath. "But we needed an excuse to be at the pond so we could dump the dirt."
"Dump what dirt?"
Fritz took her hand, and in that moment I was glad that he was the older brother and that telling her was his responsibility more than mine. He leaned into her and very quietly said,
"The dirt from our tunnel, beneath the wall."
To her credit, Mama took the news better than we had expected. She didn't yell or faint, neither of which would have surprised me. But it took her a long time to start breathing again, and when she did, it was in loud, shallow gasps. She shook her head in disbelief and let Fritz hold her shoulders to keep her calm.
"What have you done?" she whispered. "Oh, my children, why would you do this?"
As the reality of our confession sank in, she pulled us into a quiet alleyway and faced each of us with horror in her eyes. I hated seeing that expression from my mother. It was one thing to see fear from Fritz, or to feel it myself. But we had handled our fear, and were managing our troubles as they came. To see so much worry from Mama was something else entirely. It meant that maybe everything wasn't as safe as we had let ourselves believe.
"What will happen when that tunnel is found?" she whispered.
"Because it will be. They always are." "We'll be gone by then," Fritz said.
"How do you know? You are working in the shadow of the wall. Do you think the guards aren't watching you? Aren't curious about what you're doing?
A garden is a nice excuse, and maybe they'll ignore the laundry, but for how long?"
We hadn't told her about Officer Mueller, nor did we intend to. If she knew that one of the Grenzers had already discovered us, it would only strengthen her argument. "Papa wanted us to dig," I said.
"Your father would never have asked this,"
Mama said.
"No matter how much he misses us, he would never put us at this much risk."
"But he did," I insisted. "I saw him."
"Enough of this nonsense. Starting tomorrow, you will bury up that hole and all the tools with it. You will abandon the garden, and Fritz, you will find a respectable job until you join the military." I can't get a respectable job or any job, Fritz hissed. And I won't join their military. What's done is done. Our only choice now is to leave.
What about Oma Gertrude? Who would take care of her?
I felt awful for having forgotten about my grandmother. We couldn't leave her behind, of course, and with a broken leg, she couldn't make the walk through the uneven and narrow tunnel.
I never understood the way your father thought, and I don't understand it in you two either.
Mama was shaking her head again.
We have a good life here.
No, Mama, I said. We don't. So much of what we tolerate is just wrong, even if nobody wants to think about it. We can't keep living this way.
But at least we will live. It's what your father would have wanted.
Don't talk about him as if he's dead. My words came out just as sharp as if I'd yelled them. I know what Papa wanted, for all of us to come to the West with him that night. You said no. If it weren't for you, we wouldn't have to build a tunnel, and we'd be safe and all together. This is your fault.
Goethe, that's enough.
For a moment, Fritz's tone had sounded the way I remembered my father's voice, and I thought about how disappointed Papa would be if he had heard me speak so rudely to my mother. I'm sorry, I whispered to her. That wasn't true.
Some of it is, she said quietly. I'm sorry for that, too, that I wasn't brave when I needed to be.
Mama's face seemed to have aged years during our conversation in that alleyway. I felt older, too, as if the things I spent so much time thinking about were light years away from what other girls my age were doing. I no longer cared about dolls or dresses or even smuggled Beatles records. What a silly rebellion that was compared to my actions now, near treason in the eyes of my government. We'll take you to the tunnel tomorrow, I said. You'll see.
Only if it's dried out by then,
Fritz reminded me.
It got a lot of water today.
He shouldn't have said that. Mama's back stiffened and I knew she was picturing Fritz and me swimming for our lives. That hardly helped our cause.
Let's go.
Mama shook off a shiver that ran through the length of her.
I feel too exposed out here. We're safer at home.
But as we neared our apartment, I doubted that was true. Stasi vehicles were in front of our building with armed officers on the street. Mama instinctively got us behind her while Fritz and I looked at each other. My heart lurched into my throat. Were they there for us?
Oma Gertrude gave me her car, Mama said cautiously. There's not much gas left, but we'll go as far as we can. I parked it in a lot behind us. You and Fritz go get inside the car and hide on the floor. I left the keys on the table upstairs. I'll come back for you soon. No, Mother.
Fritz put a hand on her shoulder to guide her away with us.
If they're here to arrest Goethe and me, then they'll arrest you too.
Before we could act, a woman's screams caught our attention. Stasi officers were leading her outside in handcuffs. I immediately recognized her as the beautiful woman I had seen the night I stole the pulley.
She was trying to fight the officers, but once she got onto the street and saw the crowd, she yelled,
"It's no crime to think or to speak or to be me!"
They were nearly the same words that had been on Herr Krause's handmade stamped papers. Even after being arrested, Herr Krause must have found another way to get his message out. Maybe with small meetings in his apartment, like those he used to hold with my father. Herr Krause was brought out again, but this time his body was on a gurney and perfectly still. And since Stasi officers were carrying him out, I figured it was safe to assume his death wasn't an accident. Herr Krause had received his punishment for daring to think, and for getting others to think too. Sadness stabbed at my gut for how wrong this was, how unfair. Yet I couldn't cry. I wanted to, but in that moment, fear was overwhelming every other sense in me. Whatever crimes Herr Krause had committed, it was safe to assume that Fritz and I had done far worse. If we couldn't get Mama to change her mind, soon we would face Herr Krause's punishment, too. Chapter 33. God preserve me from my friends. I can deal with my enemies. German proverb.
Mama wouldn't allow Fritz and me to go back to the tunnel the next day, not even to garden. But Officer Mueller had warned us that time was our enemy, and so I decided even if there was something small I could do to help, I would. We needed to know how wide the death strip was, and the only place I could get a decent view of it was from Anna's bedroom window. Somehow, I had to beg, swindle, or steal my way inside. Fritz drew me a picture that explained how to estimate the distance of the strip. The Berlin Wall was 3.5 meters high. I had to look at it and pretend it was laid out flat on the ground. Then I had to imagine another wall behind it, and so on, across the entire death strip.
"Try to be as accurate as you can," he whispered in my ear. "But if you are going to make any errors, estimate a distance wider than we need. The worst possible mistake is for us to come to the surface inside the death strip."
Since Mama didn't know about Anna's and my dissolved friendship, she gladly gave permission for me to visit her. I knew she believed seeing Anna would weaken my resolve to leave East Berlin, but if anything, it would be just the opposite. My pulse was racing when I knocked on Anna's door. Despite the great number of laws I had broken over the past few weeks, none of them caused me anywhere near the guilt that I felt now. I had nothing to offer Anna as either a gift or an apology, and although I was bathed and my hair was combed and I was in one of my few remaining nice outfits, I felt unnatural, as if the sweat and dirt I earned each day in the tunnel had become the real me. Anna's mother answered the door and at first didn't seem at all pleased to see me. But she called for Anna, and then with a voice like an icicle, she invited me in. There I was, in her apartment, though I had only been allowed in as far as the front door. I could see Anna's bedroom from here, but that wasn't good enough. And once in there, I needed time to look out the window. That would require several uninterrupted minutes. "Hello?" Anna entered the front room and stopped far short of where I stood. She looked as uncomfortable as I felt, but since I had come to her home, it was my job to repair things. "Can we talk somewhere?" I asked. In her room would have been nice, but I couldn't ask for too much too fast. Besides, now that I was here with her, I really did want us to talk. Anna awkwardly motioned me toward her couch. I followed her there, and we sat on either end, so close, and yet it felt as though an ocean divided us. Or a wall. I started. "You came to help on the garden, and I wouldn't let you. I've thought about that a lot since then. I'm sorry." "You've changed, Goethe," Anna said. "You're frustrated or angry all the time. You're jumpy around others and distant. It's almost like you're..."
"Like I'm what?"
I hoped she wouldn't accuse me of trying to escape, because I'd have to deny it, and I really didn't want to lie to her anymore.
But I had to ask.
Anna frowned. "Like you're unhappy, I suppose."
"I miss being your friend," I said softly. That wasn't a lie.
"Do you?" she asked. "Because sometimes I think you do, and then other times it's like you don't want me anywhere near you."
"I'm sorry," I said. "I wish you could understand."
"I want that too." Anna looked sideways at me. "Is there anything you can say to me to explain anything?"
The way she emphasized the final word worried me. Was she asking me to explain my odd behavior over the last several weeks? Because the answer involved telling her the biggest secret of my life, and I could never reveal that. Anna's mother came into the room to dust, and Anna quietly rolled her eyes at me. I understood. This was a tough conversation, and having an adult in the room didn't make things any easier. She stood and motioned for me to follow her. My heart jumped. We were going to her room. I would have been more excited, except that I couldn't help but feel like a traitor in the face of her trusting attitude. She wanted a chance to repair our friendship, but I was only here as a clumsy sort of spy. Anna's room was the same as it had always been, simple and sparse, and painted in a cream color that somehow reflected gray. I'd always thought of it as boring, even depressing, but Anna seemed to like the simplicity. As soon as I entered, my eyes went directly to her window, but the curtains were closed. It feels dark in here. It was a ridiculous thing to say, considering that her curtains were white and plenty of light shone through. But I was committed to it now. I sat at the head of her bed, where I'd have the best view. She took my hint and widened the curtains, though from my current angle I couldn't see as much as I wanted. "How do you enjoy gardening?" she asked. Pulling my attention from the window, I shrugged. "It's not as fun as I thought it'd be. It could be a long time before we see if anything grows."
"If you ever see it."
I did a double take, but Anna only smoothed out her bed cover.
"I mean, since you planted so late in the year."
"Right." I was becoming increasingly uncomfortable with this conversation. Our friendship was hanging on by threads, and there was nothing I could do to change that. I was here for one reason only. First, I had to get Anna out of the room. It required me to abandon my pride, but it had to be done. "The problem is we haven't had much to eat for a while." Anna responded just as I knew she would.
"Do you want something to eat now? We have plenty of food."
"Maybe a sandwich," I suggested. "That would take some time to make." It also sounded truly wonderful.
"Okay."
As Anna slid off her bed and left, I went to work. I made sure her door was shut and then crossed to her window. I could see the top corner of the welcome building from here, but not all the way to the ground. That was a relief. It meant she couldn't be spying on us, if that was ever her intention. If I stood at just the right angle, my view of the death strip was better than what I'd expected. In fact, there was a dark area inside the death strip that was probably very close to where we were tunneling. That made it easier to know where to measure. Fritz said the wall was 3.5 meters high, about 1.5 times his height. In my mind, I laid it out flat. That was 3.5 meters into the death strip. I imagined another one behind it, and then another and another. I'd glanced at this area several times before, but never really considered how much wider it was than I thought. When I stood in the tunnel, I imagined us being at least halfway across, and maybe even more, but we weren't anywhere near that far. Another length of wall went down in my mind, and another. The farther I went, the harder it was to be sure of my distances. So much of the open area looked the same as everywhere around it, and no matter where I stood, I was still at an odd angle. In fact, I might have lost track altogether if I didn't have that dark patch of ground to keep me oriented.
"Goethe?"
I swerved away from the window, so startled that I jumped, which must have looked very odd to Anna. Her eyebrows pressed low.
"What are you doing?"
"Nothing important." I shut the curtain and walked over to take the sandwich from her. My mouth was full with the first bite when I added, "Thank you for the food."
"There's more I can do to help," Anna said. "My mother talked to me just now. We know a lot of your clothes have been ruined in the garden this summer, and there's some things I've outgrown."
She walked over and opened her small closet.
"Would it offend you to take any of the things I can't use?"
She started to pull some outfits from her closet, but my focus was on a pair of her boots on the floor. Not the brown pair she had worn when she visited me in the garden patch before, but her usual black ones. Clumps of mud still clung to the soles, and what was dry had flaked off onto the floor. I had seen so much dirt in the last few weeks that if there was anything I could recognize, it was the dark soil we had tunneled out from beneath the welcome building. Anna had been to the garden patch recently. Maybe she had gone farther than that. I forgot about the clothes Anna was laying out on the bed, and even about the sandwich in my hand. "I need to go," I announced, already halfway to her door. "I forgot something."
"Gerda, don't. Where are you going?"
Anna called after me.
"Home." "I'm sorry. Was it the clothes? Did I do something wrong?"
Oh, yes. She certainly had. But behind her innocent facade, she had to know this wasn't about the clothes. I'd always known there was a risk of someone I knew becoming a spy against us. But never in a million years would I have expected it to be Anna. There was no longer any question of our friendship. All that remained was to wonder just how much of an enemy she had become. Chapter 34. A disaster seldom comes alone. German proverb.
My tears had dried by the time I told Fritz the story shortly afterward, which was a good thing because he wasn't showing much sympathy for whether I held on to a friend I was going to abandon soon anyway. His larger concern was for the dirt on Anna's boots.
Are you sure the mud was on different boots than when she came to see us before?
Positive. The mud wasn't that old, not over a day, I'd bet.
You should have asked her about it.
Asked her what exactly? I retorted. If she knows about the tunnel, if she's going to turn us into the Stasi? Because I didn't need to say a word. The answer to both questions is pretty obvious.
Okay, calm down.
Fritz and I were in the basement of our own apartment building. This was our new sanctuary, since Frau Eberhardt patrolled the sidewalks, and since we weren't yet sure which was more dangerous inside our own apartment, the microphones or Mama.
We have to assume that Anna knows, and that sooner or later she's going to tell someone. Whether it's the Stasi or not, it'll eventually get back to them.
Mueller will come with them. My voice wavered, revealing too much of my fear of him. He already told us what he'll do when that happens.
Then we have to finish. Fast.
Fritz paced a moment, then finally sighed and shook his head.
Did you get a chance to measure the death strip?
Sort of. Anna came in before I'd finished, but I got a good start. It was hard because I got distracted a couple of times and I thought,
how wide?
100 meters. Fritz let out a low whistle and almost staggered to a nearby crate where he could sit down.
We're not even halfway.
He cursed and kicked at another box next to him. Hoping to keep his spirits up, I said, let's dig it smaller then. We can walk that distance hunched over or even crawl through.
That'll help,
Fritz said.
But we need to take weeks off our time, not days. What if we ask Officer Mueller to dig with us?
We can't trust him. He told us that himself. I shook my head fiercely. With a shovel in one hand and a gun in the other, which will he use when Anna calls the officers to check out the tunnel?
You told me that you got distracted, Fritz said. Maybe you were off on your count.
I might be off by a few meters, but not 20 or 30. And I know I was accurate almost to the halfway point because there was this dark spot in the strip, almost where our tunnel ended. For the first time, I thought about the chance of that. Of a dark spot so close to the tunnel. That couldn't be a coincidence. Fritz had caught on as well.
What do you mean, a dark spot?
I saw it from far away, and that's just what it looked like at the time. My breaths became shallow as I realized what I must have seen. But I don't think it's a spot. It might be a shadow. I think the ground is sinking where we've dug it. Fritz leapt to his feet.
Come on, we've got to go and see it for ourselves.
Even as I followed him, I said, we're not allowed to go there. Mama doesn't...
There's no time to explain.
If the tunnel collapses while we're inside, or if the Grenzers notice the dark spot and come to investigate... I shuddered. Either way, we're dead. The only exception that I could see was if Mama figured out we had gone to the tunnel in defiance of her orders. Then we wouldn't have to worry about the Grenzers. She'd get to us first and do worse than the police ever could. Fritz and I hurried along the street, got to the block that emptied into the back lot for the welcome building, and then crept along the wall to get inside. I wished we could just peek through the wall from here, carve out a hole big enough to see if we had left our own X marks the spot for our secret beneath that ground. But we would have to content ourselves with entering the tunnel and looking for any sign that the ground was sinking. My biggest worry was that from within the tunnel, the collapse wouldn't be noticeable. If we couldn't find it, then we couldn't fix it. I scanned the roof of the tunnel. Instantly, everything became suspicious to me. Why was one area lower than elsewhere? Exposed rock jutted out overhead and to my left. Was it new? So far, everything looked how it had when he dug this section, Fritz assured me. But that didn't make me feel any better. We finally found the sunken area at the end of the tunnel, around where the pipe had been nicked. Endless liters of water had sprayed so powerfully here, we probably should have expected it to affect the ground stability overhead.
We'll be caught for sure, Fritz said.
Maybe Officer Mueller can explain it away. I didn't necessarily believe he would, but maybe it was the best of the few horrible options we still had.
How deep did the dark spot look?
I don't know, I answered. Not very, but it does look different from the area around it.
Maybe we can brace it up, or at least do something to keep it from falling any further.
How? Fritz already had the answer.
I'm a bricklayer. I can build supports overhead, maybe even raise some places if the ground is still soft enough. But the brick will be expensive and too suspicious to purchase.
There's brick upstairs, I said. Maybe even a bag of mortar, too.
Then I'll get started right away, Fritz said. Help me get it carried downstairs.
I was already on my way. Chapter 35. The only way to deal with an unfree world is to become so absolutely free that your very existence is an act of rebellion. Albert Camus, French author. Dinner time was coming soon, and Fritz and I were debating what to do. Mama would be expecting us for supper.
If we didn't show up, her initial worries would turn to anger when she realized why we were late.
On the other hand, her anger was inevitable now. The instant we came home, she would know we had disobeyed her. And even if we tried to explain why, neither of us was sure the reasons would matter to her. Nothing we'd already said mattered anyway. Besides that, we had spent the last several hours at a mad pace getting brick loaded into the tunnel, mortar mixed up, and finding tools and supports that we could use. To avoid having to build frames overhead, Fritz was mortaring together larger sections of brick on the ground. He said it'd be several hours before they were dry enough that he could lift them into place, but we had plenty of work to do until then. "I'll go home and explain to Mama," I offered. It was the last thing in the world I wanted to do. I'd rather have faced an angry bear right now, but Mama needed to know where we were, and Fritz had to stay here and keep working. He looked down at me and nodded.
"She's only doing what she thinks is right for us, Goethe. Try to remember that."
"One of her children is on the other side, and her husband."
"Yes, and he would be the first to agree with her. Papa will be happy if we make it to the other side, but Mother is right. He would never want us taking this risk."
Fritz reached out for another brick in his stack, and I handed it to him. "What do I tell Mama, then?" Fritz sighed.
"Tell her that we love her, and that it'll break our hearts if she doesn't come with us, but you and I are going to finish this tunnel."
It had never occurred to me that Mama might not come with us. Tears burned my eyes at the possibility. I couldn't be happy without her in the West, any more than I could be happy in the East without my father. Somehow, I had to make her come. Fritz dug away at the wall and inserted a brick deep into the dirt. That would hold up the wider stacks he'd already mortared. Fritz figured they would brace the dirt until we were able to finish the tunnel. My thoughts drifted back to Anna. How long had she known our secret? And how much longer until she finally decided to tell? Time was running out for us. I could feel it, probably the same way my father had felt it days before the wall went up.
"This might help support the dirt,"
Fritz said as he examined the sunken area again.
"But I don't see how we can lift it so it doesn't get worse. That dark patch on the death strip is going to remain there. If they run a patrol through there, they'll figure out what caused it."
"You can slide wood planks above the bricks to lift it,"
someone behind us said. Startled, both Fritz and I turned. It was my mother's voice, firm and commanding. I couldn't quite read the expression on her face. It wasn't anger or fear or even disappointment. Thank goodness for that, because I could withstand my mother's anger and knew how to calm her fears. But the times in my life when I had disappointed her still felt like unhealed wounds. Now Mama held a flashlight aimed toward the ceiling. Over her arm was a sack filled with food. My recent days of hunger had fine-tuned my sense of smell, and I always knew now when food was nearby. I stared at her, completely unsure of what to do next. I hated to disobey her, but I would if I had to. Nothing was more important than keeping this tunnel from caving in. Mama seemed almost rigid, making every effort not to touch the walls or look up at the dirt ceiling. I didn't bring you much to eat because we don't have much. Her voice was as near to stone as her body. And I thought it would be all right once I started back to work today. But when I got there, they demoted me.
Because of us? I asked.
Mama sniffed and shook her head. While I was with Oma Gertrude, they started looking into some letters I'd written to your father years ago. They said it was evidence that I was still divided in my loyalties. I told them that he was my husband, and of course I was loyal to him. They offered to help me divorce him, but I won't do that. So I was given a much lower job as a consequence. What they'll pay me now won't begin to cover our rent, or our food, or anything else.
Fritz started forward.
Mama.
But she held up a hand.
How much farther do you have to go? A long way,
Fritz said.
We're not halfway yet. How deep below the surface are we?
Fritz shrugged.
We started at the level of the air raid shelter. I've tried to keep it flat, but the farther we've gone, the harder it's been to keep track of that.
I stepped forward. Mama, we know you don't like this idea, but now that we've started, we have to finish it.
I know.
Mama finally patted at the tunnel walls, then looked back toward the entrance.
Fritz, you will not join their military. And Goethe, you must grow up where you can read any book you want, think any idea you want. And we will be together again as a family. We will finish this tunnel.
With that, she set the food on the ground and pushed past me, pausing only long enough to gently brush a hand across my cheek. Then she stood beside Fritz and pointed to the sunken area.
Those bricks will give us support, she said. But if we can find a sheet of wood, we can force everything upward. It might work. But where can we get the wood? Fritz asked.
There's a door on the upper floor of this building, I said. It fell off its hinges, so it's just lying there on the floor. It's the perfect size.
How do you know about that? Fritz asked. We only went up to the main floor for the brick.
On one of the trips, I checked upstairs to see if there was more, I said. But I hurried back down because most of the roof is exposed to the sky. At the right angle, the guards could look down from the watchtower and see inside. Mama pressed her mouth tightly together and Fritz only shook his head.
We'll have to get the wood from somewhere else, he said. Not upstairs, where we're exposed.
Then from where? I asked. Unless we dismantle our own doors at home, where would we get something like that? And even if we did, can we just carry a big door through town? What'd be our excuse for having it?
I bumped into Frau Eberhardt when I was bringing you this supper,
Mama said.
The woman wouldn't let me go until she asked 100 questions about you two and this garden. I can't imagine her letting us get past with a perfectly usable door.
Fritz exhaled slowly.
Okay, then we'll get the door from upstairs, but tonight after it's dark. I'll do it.
It'll be me, Mama said. You two have taken enough risks.
No, I'll go, I said. Neither of you knows where it is, and we obviously can't bring a light to look for it. I'm strong enough, and I'm the smallest. If they turn their spotlights onto the building, I'll fit in the shadows the best.
Mama and Fritz looked at each other. Neither wanted to admit it, but they knew I was right. And so without another word, it was decided. After dark, I would go under the noses of the guards.
Chapter 36. I learned that courage was not the absence of fear, but the triumph over it. Nelson Mandela, South African activist. We spent the remainder of the evening working in the tunnel. With Mama's help, we made far more progress than ever before. She suggested we concentrate our efforts on deepening the tunnel and not to worry about spreading out the dirt anymore.
It was a good plan while you needed it, she said. But if the Grenzers come back for another investigation, they'll find the tunnel anyway.
So we piled the dirt up in the basement, similar to how we had done it at first. Mama showed me how to pack it down with the bucket so that more would fit into the same space, and so that it wouldn't fall over,
While Fritz continued to build supports for the sunken area, Mama dug and I hauled dirt. I hadn't thought she'd be as strong as Fritz, but she dug with a ferocity I'd never seen before.
"This is the strength of a mother fighting for her children," she said. "When you have children of your own, you will understand. I should have been here with you from the first day."
"We should have told you from the first day," I said. For the first time, possibly ever, my mother and I were on the same side of an argument. When we took a rest shortly before curfew, Fritz suggested Mama should return to the apartment and make noises to cover for our absence.
"If someone is listening, they need to think we're all home. I won't leave you both here overnight. We'll get the door, then sleep here in the tunnel," Fritz said. "That'll mean Goethe and I can start working first thing in the morning. Besides, we're in no greater danger here than we would be at home."
I doubted that was true. If they came for us at home, we'd probably be arrested. But if they found us here, well, we knew where we were. Still, Fritz was right about satisfying the microphones, so Mama reluctantly kissed each of us goodbye and said she would return in the morning. She also promised to bring us enough food for another day's work, which cheered me up considerably. Even though I knew we had almost nothing in the apartment, she was my mother, and if she said she would bring food, then food was coming. Fritz and I continued working until long past dark. Mama had run into a sandy patch of dirt, so it came apart easily and wasn't as heavy to haul away. When it was very late, we at last made the decision to go upstairs.
"Are you sure you want to go?"
Fritz asked. I was sure I didn't. If there was anything I had ever been so certain of in my life, it was that I didn't want to drag a door off the exposed top floor of this building. But it couldn't be Fritz who went. He was taller, and there was more of him to get caught in their searchlights. We went first to the main floor. I wasn't comfortable here, since we could be seen from the back windows if someone happened by. But we'd spent enough time here earlier today to know where it was safe to stand. It was the upper floor that worried me. From my view out Anna's window, I knew she could see this level if she happened to look, which meant any number of other people could too. It would be a bright moon tonight, but the moon hadn't risen yet. All the more reason to hurry and get this over with while I still had some darkness on my side. Obviously, the main thing to avoid was being in the view of the watchtower guards. There were always lights on the tower at night, but I figured if I couldn't see the lights, then the guards shouldn't be able to see me.
"Be careful."
It was a completely unnecessary thing for Fritz to say, but I was glad he said it anyway. I nodded and then started up the stairway to the upper floor. If I stayed against the far wall, I was in total shadow cast by the watchtower lights. A few glowing stars would help me see, but mostly I hoped my eyes would adjust soon. Dirt and small rocks littered the stairs. That meant they could be slippery, and we'd have to carry the door down when we were finished. Dragging would make too much noise, especially if it pushed rocks down with it. At the top of the stairs, a wide hole on the roof gave clear sight to the watchtower. Since the hole was much closer to me than to them, I figured it was easier for me to see out than for them to see in, and I prayed I was right. My urge was to hurry and get this over with, but I forced myself to move slowly. Slow would be harder for them to see. Slow kept me carefully thinking through every choice I made up here. The door was in the opposite corner from where I was crouched. Half of it remained in shadow, and the other half sat beneath the light of the stars.